This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Chris Holford is the Provost and Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs at Purdue University Northwest for both the Hammond and the Westville campuses. And he is with us to bring us up to date on some very important things that are coming up for folks who attend Purdue University Northwest, for families and others in the community that want to know what is happening on campus these days, especially with the coronavirus pandemic still underway. Mr. Provost, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Well, thank you, Chris, for having me. I'm excited to talk about what we've been up to over at Purdue Northwest.
Well, it's been something I know that you've had to plan out for quite a while. In fact, when the campuses closed down near the end of March here, and things went virtual for quite a while, I know, for classes finishing up and the like and through the summer months, you had to start putting all these plans together. I should mention at the outset of our conversation that what happens at the regional campuses is not necessarily what is going to happen on the main campus in West Lafayette, although you'll find as we talk there are a lot of things that are very similar, and you'll want to know about those, and we hope to have an opportunity in the days and weeks ahead to talk to some folks down at West Lafayette about that too. But Chris, if you will, bring us up to date in particular, what has happened in the months since the end of March when the campus kind of closed, both campuses, I should say, kind of closed down.
So certainly this is sort of an unprecedented time across the whole United States in higher education. In our case, you know, we went home on spring break in the middle of March, and within about a week we made a decision to move all of our courses to an online content or online delivery mode. Mm-hmm. So all of our faculty worked very hard over about a week period to get every class we have in an online format. As you mentioned, we continued that format. It's currently going on right now. Our entire summer offerings were done also in an online format, and those will wrap up here by about August 17th. I think everything will start shutting down as we gear up to the fall semester. So we didn't have time to take a break at that point because we had to start thinking ahead. And so I will share with you our faculty. I think they've worked really hard over the summer.
Yes.
To develop modes in which we can deliver content to our student in a safe and responsible manner. And that's been one of our underlying themes, that we're looking to do things safe and responsibly. I'm very happy to share with you, you know, there are a variety of different learning styles that students have. And so our faculty sat down in each program and started having a discussion about what is in the best interest of the students. And out of that, and as well as our Safe Return Committee, we are launching four different styles of class. Now, this is new for us. Normally, we would have run about 85% of our courses in a traditional format with students coming to campus. That has changed dramatically as we look towards the fall semester. We will still have some face-to-face offerings if, in a month, we're able to do that safe and responsibly. However, we've adopted a couple styles of what we would call hybrid delivery that combines both face-to-face and online in different styles. We have a class, what we're calling virtual classroom, that is remote, so everybody's sitting at home, but a professor is logged in live and delivering the content to a live audience. We have true, what we would call hybrid delivery, in which a lot of the lecture content is delivered online. But in some cases, like lab intense courses, students may still come to campus, but not in the same way they would have come to campus in the past, where we would have had 20 or 30 students in a lab. We've set it up to bring in small numbers of students so they still can acquire the skills that are necessary. And then finally, we do have fully online classes, and those are distributed right now as of today. About a third of our classes may run face-to-face, a third online, and a little over a third hybrid or virtual classroom.
Well, it sounds like that you've got a very, very good mix set up there so that when classes actually start, August 25th, if I recall, around the 25th, then you'll have some way to be able to spread things out. What kind of work that had to be done technically for Purdue University Northwest, for both campuses, both for Hammond and for Westville, to be able to accommodate all this virtual learning that's going to have to be set up, besides whatever you can do in person?
Yes, yeah, so the actual date is 24th. Our semester will launch on the 24th. Mm-hmm. In the background, over the summer, we've done a number of things. So we use a learning management system called Brightspace. Students are used to logging into the Brightspace system to acquire some of the information, and that does have the ability for faculty to engage students in sort of online delivery. A company in January or February that was a little more obscure, Zoom, has become a powerhouse now. So we've secured a number of Zoom licenses for our faculty to be able to do large-scale online interaction, and then that allows a faculty member still to do breakout groups and other things within that system. In addition, we use a system called WebEx as well. So there are a variety of platforms that we were able to upscale over the summer and purchase licenses for that will allow us to sort of upscale our online and hybrid delivery.
Now, I know during the summer months, there were some facilities on campus that were open, but very, very for very limited purposes and very limited hours. For example, I know on the Hammond campus, the Student Union and Library Building and the Library and Student and Faculty Building at the Westfield campus were open, I guess, Monday through Friday, but only for students to use. And at the time, the libraries and the computer labs at both campuses were closed. Is that still going to be the case as we go into the new fall semester?
We have a phased opening right now, and so you are correct. So we really closed down a lot of the buildings. Part of the reason those buildings were left open was because when we closed a lot of the other buildings, we had to leave space for students in our community that didn't have access to computing resources. Mm-hmm. So the buildings that you identified that were open over the summer were open for students only to get in. The buildings physically have been set up differently. We are practicing social distancing, so we physically removed things that are in close proximity. Additionally, our IT staff expanded the range of our Wi-Fi system to the parking lots to allow people that didn't have access to Wi-Fi to be able to drive onto campus and sit in the safety of their own car and still connect to the Wi-Fi. Currently, we have a couple buildings that are open to the public right now, but only a couple. That's part of our phased reopening. The next phase in the reopening will happen about a week before classes resume. But as you mentioned, we're largely closed except to our student population. As we get into the fall semester, we've already made a decision that some of the student events, some of the activities that take place on campus for the campus community will still proceed, but will largely be closed to public operations still.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Chris Holford, who is the Provost and the Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs at Purdue University Northwest for both campuses, Hammond and Westville. And I know during the summer months, it was probably difficult for folks who live in the community and to get onto campus. They were expecting to be able to come in and check things out, the computers and libraries in particular. And so with making the changes going into the fall months, are you still having to work closely with our community members about this? Do they pretty much all know what to expect if they come onto campus now, just as a visitor more than anything else?
Yeah, so we've largely discouraged visitors from coming on campus so mm-hmm. that we can get our faculty and staff and students onto the campus mm-hmm. and maintain some de-densified areas so that we're not congregating people together. But certainly our services are open, in particular to our student body.
Are we finding that all of the great things that people would enjoy coming to campus, coming in, for example, to, say, the Student Union and Library Building in Hammond, to grab a snack at the cafe, is that going to change dramatically as you might expect it would because of the pandemic?
Yeah, I'm smiling a little bit right now. we have dramatically changed the way we will bring people onto campus. So things like the cafeterias have been converted into really grab and go for the safety of the students and staff.
Right.
So that people can come in, pick things up in a grab and go fashion, and then move on from those spaces. Again, the idea is to de-densify the campus and prevent people from congregating in any individual area. So if you walked onto campus today, you would notice that we've removed a lot of the furniture. We've separated the computer terminals from one another to allow people still to have access to be able to utilize things, but in, again, a safe and responsible manner.
Now, have you had to do the same sort of thing in just the general office space or the lab space where the faculty and staff normally would be in? Would they have to find something different to, for an arrangement? Have you had to make those kind of arrangements separate, like you've had to do in the open public spaces?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So we're in a phase one reopening right now, and part of that reopening was developing schedules that prevented everybody from being in an office at the same time. So, for example, my office in Academic Affairs, we have we're utilizing both campus locations. We have our staff spread out across both locations, and then we're still asking some of our employees, about a third of our employees that have a capacity to work remotely, we've asked them to stay working remotely, and we actually take turns working remotely so that people can rotate through the offices. So we right now, my office, for example, has only about a third of the normal staff that you would have seen under normal operation in any office at any given time. And that's true for many of our offices.
I would imagine this has been a real, real challenge for the physical facility staff at both campuses to get used to and have to make all the changes.
Oh, absolutely. And so our physical facility staff are the ones that have been here actually changing the physical structure of the campus, arranging the rooms, determining the densities that we can accommodate in any classroom, and then physically moving or blocking furniture off so that so we can maintain a safe environment.
I know there's one concern that has come up in other places, and I'm sure it certainly has and will be, I'm sure, through the whole year at Purdue University Northwest at both campuses, is dealing with airflow in the buildings, because we've heard that that's very, very crucial when you have to have people inside buildings, inside spaces, to make sure that the airflow is right so that it doesn't spread any virus. Is that the case there at Purdue Northwest?
Yeah, I think that certainly goes along with our idea of de-densifying a lot of the buildings. And I think that one of the things that you'll see more of as we return back in the fall and students start coming back on campus is a lot more activities are being held in the outdoors. So, for example, our student welcome back activities have completely been de-densified. They'll be spread all over campus, and the vast majority of them will be held outdoors. So that we can keep the movement indoors down to sort of a minimum.
Well, the last thing I can think of that we have to talk about that's so vital is something that has come about at least by mandate here just this week, and that's face coverings, face masks. What is going to be the policy for Purdue University Northwest at both campuses as we go into a new school year on face masks?
So we will be asking all our faculty and students on campus to wear face masks all the time when they're on campus. The university is providing our faculty, staff, and students with face coverings. And so that certainly will be something that we have done differently. But again, given the distribution of types of courses that we've made available, it's probably likely that only about a third of the student population would be on campus at any given time relative to in other past years. So really, this idea of de-densifying to maintain safe social distancing, and then coupled with things like required face masks, we'll roll out something we're calling our pledge, our version of the pledge, that we're asking students to complete some required training before they come back on campus about being safe and responsible, and then also taking a pledge to say, hey, you know, I recognize that me taking these particular steps helps the safety of our entire campus community. So like with many things, we focus on the importance of safety of the pride or safety of the community.
Have you got any feedback from folks not only on campus but off campus as well, too, as to how things are coming along as they get ready to come onto campus or participate during the year ahead?
So, yeah, we're talking about these things. This has become a normal part of our weekly agenda, discussing it with department chairs. They're discussing it with faculty. We're holding weekly town hall meetings. Our student government reps have been fantastic through this process. Mm-hmm. And the student government reps have arranged weekly town hall meetings. Chancellor Keon and I, as well as other members of the campus community, are meeting regularly with the students and student body and student government to discuss the steps that we're taking right now and what their expectations will be when they come back to campus and how we will be able to engage them in a productive environment. So I would say those sorts of conversations are going on constantly. We have newsletters going out. And one thing I want to point our community to is if you log into our website, pnw.edu, as that site loads, you'll notice right up at the top bar is a big gold bar, and it is our COVID-19 campus response. It contains information for the community, for our students, for our faculty, and for our staff specifically. And so there's all sorts of information about how the campus is responding to this crisis, including a more detailed description of the types of learning style that are available. And again, if I could just roll back to that for a second, part of the reason we did that was to allow students, we think about maintaining safety of our faculty and staff, but our students are certainly very important, and we want them to be able to go in and see all the different learning styles that are available to pick learning styles that fit both the way they learn as well as what they need to keep themselves in a safe environment.
Chris Holford is the Provost and the Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs at Purdue University Northwest for both the Hammond and the Westville campuses. And once again, classes will resume on the campuses in the hybrid fashion or however the fashion it may be for either students to be on campus or be able to do so virtually. Thank you very much for being with us to explain all this. And we hope that we have a chance to check in with you through the months ahead and see how things are coming along, too.
Well, thank you, Chris. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to be here today.
This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. There is a recent study in the latest edition of Modern Healthcare that suggests that a pregnant woman who is infected with the coronavirus could possibly spread the disease to her fetus. Now, that's been a concern ever since the pandemic began. And pregnant women are very uncertain about this, and it's rather scary times, to be sure. The information about the virus and the maternal and child health is, of course, ever-changing because the coronavirus situation is ever-changing. With us to talk about the situation, we have Dr. Camille Wright. She's the medical director for CareSource Indiana. It's a nonprofit health organization. And she, as well, is an OBGYN specialist in Noblesville, which is outside Indianapolis. Dr. Wright, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, tell us about this new study that you've had a chance to take a look at in more detail in Modern Healthcare and about the concern that obviously any woman who's childbearing these days and pregnant, to be sure, has because of the virus.
Sure. So there are reports of transmission from mom to baby in utero, which we call vertical transmission. In the literature, not just the report that was mentioned in Modern Healthcare, but also in some other overseas studies. We feel, however, that the risk of vertical transmission is very infrequent. So although there are suggestions that this can happen, it seems as though it is not very common and not the primary way that babies or infants would be infected. It's much more likely that if a baby does contract the virus, it's contracted after birth by exposure to someone who is infected, the same way that any of us would contract the virus. The good news is that the outcomes for babies really have been good, and it seems as though they are less likely to get the severe consequences that we're currently seeing in older individuals.
When you have a chance to talk with your fellow physicians about this, not only in your practice there in Noblesville, but elsewhere in Central and the rest of Indiana, what are they telling you that they're doing to help keep pregnant mothers safe as possible, at least, during the pandemic?
Well, I think the first thing is that the recommendations for keeping yourself safe in pregnancy is the same as those that we give to other individuals. So practicing social distancing and avoiding unnecessary trips outside and unnecessary exposure to other people is key. When you are outside the home, making sure that you have a face covering on, a cloth mask on, as recommended by the CDC, and that you keep that on at all times. Washing your hands for 20 to 30 seconds as frequently as possible with warm water and soap. avoiding anyone who is sick, but remembering as well that many people can be asymptomatic carriers of the virus. So just practicing, again, that social distancing is important. That's the advice that we're giving to pregnant women, and it's the same advice that we're giving to the general population. My colleagues and I do recommend, however, that if a pregnant woman feels that she has signs and symptoms of the virus, definitely reach out to your provider right away so that appropriate measures can be taken to keep her and her baby safe.
Can you tell us a little bit more about CareSource Indiana, about the organization, and how it is able to help a lot of people here in the Hoosier State?
Absolutely. CareSource is, as you stated earlier, a nonprofit health company. We offer insurance plans, specifically governmental programs, including Medicaid and Marketplace here in Indiana. We also include Medicare plans and other markets. And we will offer Medicare in Indiana starting in 2021. In addition to offering insurance plans, we really work to provide programs and incentives to encourage good behavior, good healthy habits in our members. So we try to bring to light things that may be of concern for health reasons, and we try to make sure that we do everything we can to encourage members to be healthy and to try to reduce any barriers that might exist to those healthy behaviors.
When you have a chance to talk about the issues, of course, involving pregnant women as part of your own practice being an OBGYN, do you find that these discussions have been coming up more these days because of the virus, or have they actually been there? Maybe they've been perhaps in the background more than anything else.
I think that there's always a lot of concern around health and well-being when a woman is pregnant. We all have a certain degree of concern about ourselves, but when you have a passenger on board, you tend to have a much higher degree of concern. I think that concern has certainly been heightened in today's environment, and this pandemic has really brought to the forefront the fact that we are vulnerable to bacteria and viruses in our environment. I think that what's additionally concerning about coronavirus is that many questions remain. We really don't have a long history of experience with this virus, so a lot of it is learning as we go along, learning on the job, so to speak. And so I think that is very, very concerning for a lot of people, and particularly those with babies on the way.
Dr. Wright, we appreciate you spending time with us, explaining from the CareSource Indiana viewpoint here about the issue, and your own being a specialist in obstetrics and gynecology there in Noblesville, about this problem. And we're hoping that more doctors, if they haven't discussed it before with their patients, that they have a chance to do so. I know it's probably one of the things that may or may not be easier to discuss, I suppose, because there are so much more telehealth options now. People are conferring with their physician, especially if they're in the later stages of pregnancy. They're probably doing more so on the telephone or on the computer at home, aren't they?
They are. One of the positive things that have come out of the COVID pandemic is an increased focus and utilization on telemedicine and telehealth. And for those who may not be familiar, that is the opportunity to speak to your healthcare provider by phone or by video chat, similar to FaceTime, for example, or Zoom, and get advice and healthcare remotely. And I think that is something that is increasing in utilization, something that we certainly support as a healthcare company. And I think it gives a great opportunity for patients to gain insight and advice from their healthcare provider without having to leave their home, without having to disrupt their lives, without having to miss work, and more importantly today, without having to expose themselves to the virus.
Dr. Camille Wright, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Camille Wright is the medical director for CareSource Indiana. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you very much for being with us. Coming up tomorrow, it's Reporters Roundtable Thursday, and we have an assortment of reporters, local as well as statewide. We have Indiana Public Broadcasting educational reporter Eric Wendell with us to talk about one of the pieces that he's put out there recently that's available on statewide media. And also, too, we have with us to talk about the stories they've put in print and online this week and recent days, Post Tribune reporters Meredith Coleus-Pete and Carol Carlson. And we hope you'll join us tomorrow for Regionally Speaking.